It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. You're with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, we'll hear about efforts in Wisconsin to prevent veteran suicide and support veterans with PTSD. First, here are sounds from a protest in Milwaukee last night. Protesters all around the country have been taking to the streets after President-elect Donald Trump won the 2016 election. The demonstrations have taken place on college campuses and in cities across the country. A protest in Portland turned violent after protesters out marching there were joined by an anarchist group. Police called that protest a riot. WPR reporter Chuck Kornbach joins us now. He's been covering the protests in Milwaukee. Chuck, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
Well, you were covering the protest in Milwaukee last night. Can you give us a sense of what was going on the ground there yesterday?
Well, folks organized by the group Occupy Milwaukee and also a UW-Milwaukee student group gathered in Red Arrow Park right in downtown Milwaukee, just across from City Hall, and they had a few speeches there. There was a crowd over 1,000 by then, I think, and then after a few speeches, they took to the streets, heading south towards Wisconsin Avenue and then west along Wisconsin Avenue, and basically wound their way through downtown pretty peacefully but loud. A lot of chanting, a lot of concerns raised about Donald Trump, and Milwaukee police were certainly on hand, but I did not see or hear of any people being taken in. That seemed fairly peaceful, except, as I say, for the volume.
Now, Wisconsin as a whole went for Donald Trump, obviously not in all parts of the state, but did you get a sense of who was there at that protest?
Well, they were mainly, this was a younger crowd than I had seen at some other protests involving police community relations in recent years. There's a lot of, as I say, students, it seemed, from UW-Milwaukee, some older folks as well, but largely a student-led group, and very quite passionate, a very diverse group of people, racially and gender and so on, and it seemed that they were quite passionate about their concerns about Donald Trump potentially harming civil liberties, potentially not respecting gender and marriage diversity, quite a number of things that they are worried about Trump.
And throughout his campaign, Trump took a hardline stance on issues like immigration. And one of the protesters that you spoke to mentioned that last night. Let's hear a clip from protester Claudia Silva.
Well, what brought me out tonight was obviously the injustices that Donald Trump is, that he's promising on our country, not just for me as an immigrant from Mexico, but for all of us, LGBT, Black Lives Matter, for all of us. That's why we're all here, because together we're united.
And you spoke there with... go ahead.
I was going to say, Ms. Silva stressed that she is a U.S. citizen, but she raised concern that, you know, that she gets looks from other people, and she has friends that may have been here through the Deferred Action Program yet that have not been deported because of President Obama's programs. And she says, you know, there's a lot of fear in the, especially in the Latino community, and we've heard that elsewhere this week since the election.
Now, she was also talking there about other minority groups who she believes would be affected or could be affected by Trump's presidency, and she mentioned that there was a lot of fear right now. Did that seem to be a common theme, that bringing people out last night?
Well, I think so. I mean, certainly there's going to be a lot of economic policies change, or at least presumably under Donald Trump, and jobs and other institutions will be affected, but it seemed the main focus last night was some of the social issues, some of the culture issues, and some of the, you know, legal status things that we've heard for a number of weeks and months going into Election Day. So I'd say there was some fear expressed, yes.
We're talking right now with WPR's Milwaukee-based reporter Chuck Kornbach. He's covering the anti-Trump protests that have been showing up this week in Milwaukee. And Mayor Barrett was someone else who weighed in on this. What did you hear from Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett?
Well, earlier today, Milwaukee Alderman Bob Donovan, who lost to Barrett in the most recent mayoral election, raised concern about the protests, saying there should have been a permit. Barrett Donovan complained that the protesters blocked traffic, disrupted rush hour traffic yesterday, 5:30, 6 o'clock, and that the students, didn't really seem to take the students' concerns very seriously. So a little while ago, Mayor Barrett was at a Veterans Day event in Milwaukee, and reporters asked him about his basic reaction to last night's protest.
People were frustrated. As long as they were peaceful, I think that's good. But I don't know that it changed anything. I don't know if they were trying to change anything, but there were obviously a lot of frustrated people. I would have loved to, again, have seen them use that energy in the weeks leading up to the election to get more people out to vote.
Interesting there. Chuck, what do you say to that? I mean, Donald Trump was democratically elected. Are these protesters asking for any sort of particular change?
Well, a couple things. One is sort of what happens next, and Barrett wouldn't disclose if police would put a tighter limit on additional protests. I'm not sure there's going to be more, but there might be. The other thing to keep in mind here is that Barrett is following President Obama's lines of yesterday, suggesting that if Donald Trump succeeds, the nation will succeed. Now, another thing to keep in mind is that Democrats are going to be in the minority. City mayors are not going to have a friend in the White House, it appears, at least at this point. And so they are being careful, being cautious about trying to work with Trump. They don't want to see federal aid to cities cut and other changes that would hurt urban communities. So I think Mayor Barrett and President Obama are being cautious in their comments about Donald Trump right now.
And did you get a sense about whether or not these protesters had a wish list, whether there was anything in particular that they wanted, or were they just sort of expressing their unhappiness with his election?
Well, there's also some substantive things to discuss as well in terms of the Electoral College. And also there's a move underfoot, as you've maybe seen or talked about elsewhere, to try and impeach Donald Trump before he takes office. I'm not sure of the complete ability to take on a president-elect in that way or whether they have to wait. But also the Electoral College debate has come up at some of these protests in terms of Hillary Clinton winning the popular vote nationwide, Donald Trump winning the Electoral College numbers, and people suggesting, well, we didn't do anything after George Bush won the Electoral College race in 2000. We missed an opportunity. Now there's time to do something, but I'm not sure how much cooperation any Democrats or others that want change would get from the Republicans who are now going to be in control and just probably like the way the Electoral College worked. But it came up at the protests last night.
Now, Milwaukee is not unique in seeing these protests. There were also protests in Madison. There were protests in Portland, Oregon, in New York, in Texas near Austin. I mean, do you see this as being something that's going to pick up steam, or is this sort of a knee-jerk reaction that's happening in the immediacy of the high feelings that people may be experiencing after the election?
Well, I was a little surprised about the number of people in the last two nights coming out nationwide. The vote is what it is at the national level right now. I think there's some thought that questioning whether the electoral numbers and the voting booth numbers were handled correctly, but I don't think there's a lot of challenge to that at this point. But I think there was some rage, some concern. I talked to one woman last night who said at least this rally was therapeutic, she put it, and maybe there will be more, maybe not. Certainly there's going to be other controversies that come up, but also seeing Donald Trump in the White House and the Capitol yesterday seemed to lock in that this is the election result and this is the way it's going to be, and until we have some new controversies or old controversies are revived, more protests will maybe continue. People like Barrett will say, I'm not sure what it will change, though.
Chuck, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That was WPR's reporter Chuck Kornbach joining us to talk about the anti-Trump protests that he's been covering this week in Milwaukee. Coming up, we'll hear how a Wausau-based group is working with veterans and their families to help them deal with PTSD and prevent veteran suicide. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, we'll get inspiration for how to get the most out of one of autumn's most versatile comfort foods, the potato. Right now, we're looking at new efforts to help Wisconsin veterans and their families deal with some of the mental health challenges that come with going to and coming back from war. Ron Worthy is a veteran and president of Souls of Honor, a veteran support group in Wausau. He joins us now to talk about efforts to help veterans face PTSD and to prevent veteran suicide. Ron, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
Veteran suicides in Wisconsin have been going up in the last several years. What do you think is going on?
Well, I don't think the government has looked at it as serious as they are now. They're just now beginning to tighten their belt and looking at suicide rates a little more seriously. They've tried pushing pills, and a lot of cases it's made things even worse because a lot of the opioids actually make you more depressed and could point you more towards suicide than helping. 5 weeks ago, or 4 weeks ago, I was called down to Pewaukee and met with the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs, and we kicked off what they're calling a zero veteran suicide initiative in the state of Wisconsin.
Right. Tell us about that. This is a program that focuses on the families of veterans to help them prevent suicide. Why the focus on families?
Well, that's something that Souls of Honor, my group, has been pushing for more than a year now. We've been working with Secretary Skokas. We'd have meetings. And one thing that's so important about educating, we want to educate family members, spouses, because we need the veteran to be a little more understood here. A lot of times they think that what's going on is the guy has changed, he's just a jerk now, or it could be the female too. You know, we have veterans that are male and female, and we actually, when you're in combat, you have to table all of your emotions, and what happens with PTSD is you've tabled all of your emotions. You put them somewhere in the back of your mind where they don't come out. But the only emotion you can't table is anger. So it takes very little to trip your trigger. I mean, what maybe a family member would say to you, for instance, you know, why aren't you working? Or, you know, maybe someone's not able to hold a job. They might go through a dozen jobs in a month, you know, because there's so many different things that will trip their trigger. You know, it's not necessary, and I'm sure there are some that are lazy, but that's not necessarily what's going on.
So how do you train a family member to know what to look for? Are there common signs?
Well, we're actually, I was just talking to Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs a couple of days ago and asked them what our next phase would be. They're going to start training all of the facilities, the veterans facilities in Wisconsin, about what to look for PTSD and how to work with it. And we're going to be instructed, our members, the ones that want to attend, and we will be certified where we can actually go into the community and hold some seminars here on our own and bring the family members in so we can educate them too. So it's going to be a little longer process than I would like, but it's it'll work, you know. So
in the meantime, now that you've got this platform here on the radio, what should families look for if they're dealing with a loved one who's a veteran who might be struggling with PTSD or suicidal thoughts?
Well, there's so many different signs with PTSD. You could have someone that seems like they're the happiest guy in the world, and then tomorrow you might find them gone, you know. On the other hand, you might have someone that's totally withdrawn. They don't want to go outside. They don't want maybe just sit in the darkness or something, you know. Don't open the shades. You know, there's so many different variables in between. That's why we need training ourselves, you know. But like I said, it can go from one extreme to the other.
We're talking with Ron Worthy right now. He's a veteran and president of Souls of Honor, a veteran support group in Wausau. And we're looking at a new PTSD support group for Wisconsin veterans and efforts there. Also talking about how families of veterans can help prevent suicide. And Ron, I want to talk about PTSDA. It's a group created to help veterans, and it's modeled after Alcoholics Anonymous, which was created by Souls of Honor. What's the idea behind PTSDA?
PTSDA is ran by combat vets, for combat vets, and, you know, this we've just had four meetings now. This was actually started by a couple of my members that kind of went out on their own, one of which had been in contact with Washington State, where they've had this program for a couple of years, and they've had very good success with it. And what happens is, like I said, there's no people there that are counselors or anything like that. It went from three members or four members at the first meeting, and now we're up to 15 at our fourth meeting, and it's still growing. We can actually identify what the other person is talking about, because there's no one in that room that hasn't dealt with the same, the same emotions and trials that the person next to them has. So it's basically veterans relating to other veterans. And we've got some really good feedback already in just a month. So,
and it sounds like it's a pretty diverse group of veterans that are involved in this new PTSDA group. Can you tell me about some of them, about where they come from and their different experiences?
Well, we've got people from Desert Storm. We've got a lot of the younger members from Iraq. We've got four Vietnam veterans in there, so there's a quite a diverse background of veterans there. It's one thing about combat veterans, it doesn't make any difference where you served or when. I mean, a bullet sounds the same going by an ear. I don't care when it was, you know. And that's putting it pretty mildly, but you know, we have found a lot of comfort, I guess, in talking with each other. Like I said, we're all on the same level, and it's proving to be working pretty well. So.
And Ron, I know that you struggle with PTSD yourself. What do you find to be the most helpful in coping with that?
The most helpful thing that I have ever found is such a simple thing, and it's helping other veterans. I started volunteering about 3 years ago down at King Veterans Home, and it actually came to a point where at times they had veterans that they couldn't work with, the psychiatrists, the counselors and things. These people would close themselves off. They'd shut their door, their blinds. They'd sit in there in the dark, and they didn't want anybody to even come in and take their blood pressure, you know. So they would actually call me. I would go in, and introduce myself and sit down and talk to them, and, you know, in a day or two, they were a totally different person because they had someone that understood them. The biggest mistake some, and it's not so much nowadays, but before, was when a counselor would go in and they weren't in combat. They probably weren't even in the military, and they'd say, "Oh, I know how you feel, and you've just lost that person right there," you know. So.
And Ron, just briefly before I let you go, if someone is listening right now, a veteran, and they are struggling, what do you want them to know? What advice do you have?
Well, you have to surround yourself by like-minded people. I mean, one thing that you think there's something wrong with you when you have PTSD, you struggle every day with, nobody understands me, but there are people out there that do understand you because they're all dealing with the same situation. So that's one reason that we put Souls of Honor together. Like I said, the biggest thing that helps is helping other veterans. I know I worked for a long time, and I told my significant other that, you know what? I said, I can't believe what a difference I've made in this person's life. And then I started to reflect on my own. I'm like, hey, I can't believe what a difference I've made in my own, you know? You don't realize it at first how much help it is for you, but it's quite a life-changing situation. It's great. So,
Ron, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.
That was Ron Worthy. He's a veteran and president of the group Souls of Honor, a veteran support group in Wausau. He joined us on this Veterans Day to tell us about a new PTSD support group for Wisconsin veterans and also how families of veterans can help prevent suicide. For more information, you can log on to soulsofhonor.us. Coming up after the news, we'll look at some yummy ways to cook one of the most comforting of all comfort foods, the humble potato. I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, we'll round up the top state news from the past week that you may have missed in the flood of post-election news and analysis. First, as the days get longer and the weather gets chilly, it's time to bring back comfort food. Today, we talk about one of the most versatile and comforting foods around, the potato. From salads to French fries, from samosas and curries, potatoes have a lot going for them. Our guest today shares potato recipes from around the world. Raghavan Iyer joins us now. He's a James Beard Award winner and the author of the book Smashed, Mashed, Boiled, and Baked, and Fried Too, A Celebration of Potatoes in 75 Irresistible Recipes. Raghavan, welcome back to Central Time.
Veronica, thank you so much for having me. You're making me hungry.
You're making me hungry. I have to say, this cookbook was not easy to read when I had an empty stomach. In your new book, you confessed to being a potato-holic. So how long does this love affair you've had with potatoes go back?
I would say at least 55 years. If you count in utero, it'll be 56. It truly has been one of those ingredients that actually has been sort of a crazed obsession ever since I can remember.
What do you remember about the first delicious bite of potato that you ate?
I grew up in Mumbai, India, and I lived there for the first 21 years of my life. And, being the youngest male child of a large family, I mean, my mother certainly always, came to me and asked me, what would I want to have for lunch or dinner, and especially in the evening time, first snack, and it was perennially, it was something to do with potatoes. And I think after a while, she just said, you know, it's not worth asking him because it's going to be the same answer. But that's, you know, one of my first memories is actually, you know, my mother used to, you know, our kitchens were, you know, pretty much on the floor. And so she would be sitting on the floor and cooking, and there would be a kerosene stove with a wok that rested on it with oil. And, you know, she would hand cut potatoes, and she would, you know, of course, you know them as French fries, but I grew up knowing them as potato chips. Mm. And I guess it's the English legacy. And that's how she would cut them fairly thick, and then she would fry them in hot oil. She had a very unusual way of making them, which I think, you know, it totally ruined the oil, but I just thought the flavors were a little bit more intense in terms of the saltiness of it. She would actually salt the oil as the potatoes were cooking. And, you know, of course, I mean, it was a mess to clean, but that's what she did. And that's what, you know, she figured that's the way to do it. And but the flavors were really, really quite wonderful. And that's probably one of my early childhood memories.
Now, these days, you're a serious chef. You have probably cooking's most prestigious award under your belt, the James Beard Award. Do you feel guilty at all for loving potatoes this much?
Oh, not at all. If you only knew what James Beard chefs do eat.
I bet.
I really don't, because I think that's what I wanted to prove with the book, was I could put together a collection of recipes that were extremely unique in many ways. And even if you take something as, you know, mundane as mashed potatoes, you know, and you think about the holiday season coming up, and that's what people look towards. I just felt, you know, you could, once you know what goes into working with them and how do you incorporate flavors, I always feel like that's what I bring to the table, is my knowledge of working with herbs and spices and combinations that people won't think about putting together. And I think that's what made it exciting. So it was truly fun working on the book. And somebody asked me the other day, you know, I mean, aren't you tired once you got the book done that you were sick of potatoes? And it's, I mean, even this morning I had potatoes for breakfast.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I never understand that.
It's like you eat, I'm one of those who eats potatoes, and I think about the next meal when I can, what can I do different with the potatoes?
Wow, so this is really a labor of love for you.
And, it is.
And we got to get to your recipes, and we will talk about those mashed potatoes, because most of America, a lot of America anyway, is going to be making mashed potatoes on Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. But I want to talk first a little bit about the potatoes themselves. You divide mm-hmm. them into categories, starchy and waxy. What's the mm-hmm. difference, and why do we need to know that?
Well, I think, you know, people, especially in the U.S., are not that concerned about the varietal's name. You know, they are much more, I think when they go to the grocery store, they look for, you know, either the russets or the Yukon Golds and or red potatoes. So they don't look for a particular varietal. So oftentimes, depending on what it is that you're making, there are certain techniques that work better with, for instance, the floury potatoes, which are actually high in starch and very low moisture. So because of that fact, they lend itself very well to, you know, making mashed potatoes, to turning them into baking potatoes. And so things that do require a higher amount of starch, those techniques work very well for those. The waxy potatoes are, you know, again, also sometimes known as boilers. They are a high moisture, low starch content, and so it keeps them a little bit more cohesive. And so, you know, especially when you think about the realm of, you know, potato salads, or you want to do something, you're boiling the potato, you want a potato that's going to hold its shape and size and form in the finished product. So those are some of the key differences you look for when you're choosing the potato.
Raghavan Iyer is with us right now to talk about how to get the most out of one of the world's most versatile comfort foods, the potato. He is a James Beard Award winner and author of the new cookbook. It's called Smashed, Mashed, Boiled, and Baked and Fried Too, a celebration of potatoes in 75 irresistible recipes. And we've been talking about Thanksgiving and mashed potatoes, even if it's not for Thanksgiving. A lot of people, that's a staple on dining room tables. What do we need to do the sort of quintessential delicious mashed potato?
I think, again, it goes back to choosing the right potato. Oftentimes I will go for the russet, which is, I call it the workhorse of potatoes in many ways. And so you want a floury potato like that. And Idaho russets work beautifully well for that, by the way. And so once you, I prefer, when you're making mashed potatoes, oftentimes the color, it's that whiteness of it that truly is essential. So, you do want to peel the skin of the potato, and then you cut it up into cubes, and then you boil them. You don't need to salt the water. I usually don't, but if you do, that's fine as well. And then you want to boil it until it's just tender. So when you take a fork and you pierce it, it should just fall apart, as opposed to being overly cooked. And then and the goal is to drain it, and then give the colander a few shakes, and then I return those cubed potatoes back to that same pan and to dry it out a little bit. And so when you're drying it out, you're getting rid of all the excess surface moisture. And then here's the key thing for that is, invest in getting yourself a really good ricer. Any kitchen store would have them. I've seen them in just about any grocery store or a place that sells home appliances as well.
Why not a hand mixer?
Because you don't want to beat it. And if you beat it, I think you make it much more starchy, and it becomes very gummy almost. So the secret is to actually not beat it, because that will make the starch molecules much more aggressive. And so you want it extremely light, because that's what sets apart, the mashed potato as being, it's like you feel like you're eating a bowl full of clouds. It has to be very light. And so, but before, one of the other things too, oftentimes, when people are mashing the potatoes by hand, let's say, or they're using a masher, again, you have a chance of over mashing it. And I think that tends to be a little bit, and oftentimes they'll add the cold ingredients like butter and, cream or what have you. But the secret to it is, once you, before you even start dealing with the potato in terms of ricing it, you want to get your little saucepan going with, any hot liquid you're going to add to that. Holiday season coming up, you want a sense of opulence. And so I end up pouring some cream into a pan, and I'll also add some cheese to that, or even just fresh herbs, I think, work beautifully well with a burst of coarsely cracked black peppercorns and a hint of salt in that cream. And so the cream is actually simmering, and so then that's when you sort of dry out your potatoes in the pan, and you put them into the ricer, and you basically then rice the potatoes into a bowl, a serving bowl that you're going to use. And then you're going to pour that hot cream with all those, beautiful herbs and so on. And then you basically just fold it in just until the liquid and the potatoes get incorporated. And that's it. You don't want to overbeat it. And so once you do that, it's like, when you're making something that requires a lot of beating, you're just folding it, like especially egg whites, you're folding into something. It's sort of the same concept. And so as soon as you fold it in, you're done with it. And then, again, as I said, this is sort of torture because I'm hungry. but the end result is just dynamite. And so to me, that's what makes it that right combination of potato and technique. And the temperature, I think, will yield a texture that is extremely light.
It sounds great.
And you think about, altering the flavors in those potatoes. I mean, you've got truly the world is at your fingertips. And, anything from fresh herbs to an interesting combination of spices you can throw in. And so it truly becomes an amazing sort of a flavor palette for you to paint your amazing combinations. And so that's what makes it so amazing.
I've got a caller who I think is thinking along your frame of mind here. Let's take Josh in Middleton. Josh, hello.
Hello.
Yep, you're on the air.
Hello, yes. First, I'd like to say I've loved your guys' show forever. I really wish...
I'd
like to say thank you so much. it's just been a great... I've listened ever since I was like 10, basically, and that's about 20 years ago. I'm actually from Oregon, funny enough, where I used to grow all my potatoes since I was 13. So I've been growing potatoes basically my entire life, so much so that people actually call me the Spud Stud. But yeah, it's not bad. kind of a same story, except, you know, instead of, you said India, right, is where you had your first potato?
Yes, I was born and raised there.
Oh, okay. What part of India?
I was born and raised in Mumbai, which is used to be called Bombay, and it's on the west coast of India, and so cosmopolitan city, yep.
And Josh, did you have a potato question?
Oh, yeah, sorry. One quick. My mother actually grew up in India. And she went to a charter school really close to there. So kind of a funny little side thing. But so, yes, when I'm making potatoes, so I have this mashed potato recipe, and it's basically called destructing mashed – or how's that called? Reconstructing the potato. So what I'm thinking of doing is taking these potatoes and kind of turning them back into like a hard type of potato. And I'm wondering if there's any good things that I put in there to do that.
I'm trying to understand. So you're trying to take the mashed potatoes and sort of form it into something that is more solid?
Is this sort of a twice-baked potato, Josh, where you make the mashed potato and put it back in the shell?
Well, not quite like that, because it still has that soft. I'm looking for like a hash brownie type crunchy, but keep that potato cake layer, like a good thing for Thanksgiving.
Okay, so in other words, one of the options, I think from what I am hearing you say is, you know, you're looking at taking mashed potatoes, and if you're looking at leftovers, for instance, how do you turn it into something that has a hash brown consistency, yeah?
Mm-hmm. I think that's what he's getting at, yeah.
Okay. And so what, you know, one of the things that I would, you know, again, do is, you know, oftentimes, if you want that cloud-like texture in the middle to hold itself, I would say and this sounds kind of opulent, I'm making it up as I'm going, is, you know, you can actually take another a large russet potato and then just shred it, peel it and shred it. And then what you do is you form, save half of it and then take half of that and spread it into a buttered pan. And then while it's sizzling, you can actually take some of those mashed potatoes that you made, and you can actually make that almost as a spread that as a really nice thick layer right on top of that. And then you take the remaining shred of potatoes that you've got. And again, I would make sure that you salt the shredded potatoes a little bit so you get more flavor. It doesn't, you know, sort of turn bland. And then you take this remaining half of the shredded potato and then put that on top of the mash layer. and then you cover the pan and then let the underside brown really well and then flip it over and then do the other side. And then I think you will end up with this, you know, this crispiness that you talk about, which has that that hash brown quality to it.
But that sounds just delicious. And we'll talk more about that as we continue with Raghavan Iyer, who's with us now to talk about the potato, all its versatility, many ways to eat it. Raghavan is a James Beard Award winner and the author of the new cookbook, Smashed, Mashed, Boiled, and Baked and Fried 2, a celebration of potatoes in 75 irresistible recipes. And we'd love to hear from you. What is your favorite way to eat potatoes? Do you have a secret for French fries? Well, Raghavan does, and we'll try to get to that today as well. You can call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll pick up our conversation in just a little bit here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickard. Raghavan Iyer is with us now to talk about how to get the most out of one of fall's most versatile comfort foods, the potato. He's a James Beard Award winner. His new cookbook is called Smashed, Mashed, Boiled, and Baked and Fried Too, a celebration of potatoes and 75 irresistible recipes. And we'd love to hear from you. What is your favorite way to eat potatoes? You can call us at 800-642-1234. And by the way, the recipe for Raghavan's mashed potatoes is up right now on the Central Time Facebook page, along with his recipe for the ultimate French fries. And let's take a caller now. We'll see if we can be quick and get through a couple of these. Ray in Brownsville is first. Ray, hello.
Hi. Yeah, I was just wondering if your guest has a suggestion or if it's in his cookbook of how to make butter pow at home. And what bread to use. And I can take my answer off here.
Yeah, it. I think what the caller talked about, vada pav, is it's a Bombay street food. I don't have the recipe in this book, but it's actually in my book, 660 Curries. And in essence, what it is garlicky mashed potatoes that are flavored with chilies and ginger, and it's dipped in a chickpea flour batter. And it's fried. And then they take two slices of bread. And oftentimes, you know, if you think about, I make the comparison of it's sort of like the White Castle bun, square, and it's very soft. And it's what you're going to create is that textural difference. And so, you know, white bread against potatoes is not a sin in my book. And you put the two together. And so oftentimes, when they'll get these fritters out of the oil hot, and then they take the bread and they smother the bread on both sides, on the inside, with a green chili chutney, and then they'll sprinkle sort of a dry garlic chili chutney on top of it as well, and they'll put the those croquettes right into that and eat them as a sandwich. And it's piping hot, and it's truly one of the safest foods to eat on the streets of Mumbai. It is a Mumbai street food staple. There is sort of a version of that in this book, actually, as well. In the appetizer, I call it A Tale of Two Cities, and it's basically taking the same mashed potatoes and season it very slightly in two different ways and dip it in the chickpea flour batter and you fry them. And so there is a version of that. One is fried in the Mumbai style that I just talked about, and the other one is fried actually in the South Indian version of seasoning that with roasted lentils and mustard seeds, and then it's... and it's fried as well. So it is it's one of those foods that when I land in Mumbai, I get there once a year, once every other year. And that's the first thing I actually indulge in is about 4 to 5 of these vada pavs.
Oh, that sounds fabulous, too. Well, we've got Thanksgiving around the corner, and sweet potatoes are something that comes up a lot, whether you do eat it at the Thanksgiving table or maybe you eat it in sort of a stew. What do you recommend for kind of a simple treatment, but tasty treatment of a sweet potato?
You know, obviously, the simplest thing is to just to is to bake it, and then if you just mash that a little bit and add, you know, really fine quality coarse sea salt, works beautifully well. But you know, because it's Thanksgiving, I say you should probably take it a little step further, and instead of going with your more traditional pies, or in addition to your apple pie. Which, by the way, would be great using sweet potatoes instead, and is to do a chocolate sweet potato pound cake. And I have that recipe in the book, and it's I do it in a bund pan, so you know it comes out looking gorgeous. And it's and the role of those sweet potatoes in there, you know, it makes it extremely moist, and it has and I oftentimes will season that batter with a combination of cloves and cinnamon and cracked black peppercorns, spices that are similarly used in, you know, people will make certain kinds of chai in certain parts of India. So it's taking those spices and then, which is also, you know, the aromatics that you find in holiday baking in the U.S. And so I flavor the batter with these spices. And so, and the sweet potatoes, you know, and that comes into play beautifully well when the cake comes out. I mean, it's rich and it's decadent and it's moist and it's very flavorful. Oftentimes, if you want to indulge, you know, I oftentimes will serve that with a nice, healthy portion of a fine vanilla ice cream.
Oh, that sounds beautiful. Sounds delicious. I'm going to think about that for Thanksgiving at least. Raghavan, thank you so much for joining us. It sounds also so delicious tonight. Thank you.
It's my pleasure being with you, Veronica, and thank you so much.
That was Raghavan Iyer, James Beard Award winner and author of the cookbook Smashed, Mashed, Boiled, and Baked and Fried 2, Celebration of Potatoes and 75 Irresistible Recipes. And you can check out his recipes for French fries and mashed potatoes over on the Central Time Facebook page. You're listening to Central Time. It's a sad day for music lovers. Leonard Cohen, one of the world's most legendary songwriters and poets, has died at the age of 82. Cohen was Canadian, but he spent time in New York, made connections with Judy Collins and Andy Warhol, but he never really faded away like other legends from the 60s and 70s. And just recently, severe back issues meant he couldn't leave his home, so his son Adam put a microphone on the dining room table and recorded him into a laptop, and the result was the new album, You Want It Darker, released in October by Leonard Cohen. Just this morning, I walked into my son's classroom, and Leonard Cohen's song Hallelujah was playing, his most famous song. It pretty much always stops me cold, and I hope it gives you a moment out of time, too. Godspeed, Leonard Cohen.